truth seekers. It is I, once again, Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, sitting in for Mike Malloy, who's vacationing all this week with his lovely wife, Kathy. We're going to be broadcasting once again from K-Talk AM 1150 in Los Angeles, California. And we got a hell of a show for you. Sybelle Edmonds is coming up. Wake the kids, bother the neighbors, truth seekers over on DU, spread the word over there, because I did not have the time, the time to get the word out to you. Why? Why didn't I have the time? Well, because that's where he was. Oh, that wasn't the Appalachian Trail. We were covering the Mark Sanford story on Monday, on Tuesday, and frankly, when I was covering it, I felt it was a pretty frivolous thing to cover, to be frank, to use this valuable airtime to talk about this missing governor and the nonsense that was going on with him. You know, kind of frivolous, but it was also kind of funny because, as it turned out, when they said that he was hiking at the Appalachian Trail, Sunday was Naked Hiking Day. So that was kind of funny. We thought we had to cover that. Well, apparently there is now a new euphemism called hiking the Appalachian Trail. And we can thank Governor Mark Sanford for that. The Republican, the once presidential hopeful, Mark Sanford, who wasn't in the Appalachian Trail. He wasn't even in the country at all. He was in Argentina. What was he doing there? Well, maybe later in the show, after the kids are to bed, we'll read some of the emails that he was that explain what he was doing there to his girlfriend, to his Argentinian girlfriend. Unbelievable. And what's unbelievable, there's so many unbelievable things here. One, his staff didn't know, or at least they claim they didn't know, and Sanford put out a statement later today saying that the staff didn't know. So they weren't lying for him on purpose. They were just lying for him, and apparently he let them do it. He has said he had he was on the Appalachian Trail. He's turned off his cell phone. There's no cell signal up there. Well, I think there was probably a cell signal where he was down in Argentina, where he didn't want to let anyone know that he was with his girlfriend. Missing Father's Day. Mr. Family Values. Mr. Clinton's got to resign because he had an affair. Unbelievable. But what I started to say, what was the most unbelievable to me was on Monday when the staff came out, when his staff came out and said, oh, he's on the Appalachian Trail, everything is fine. Don't worry, he just likes his solitude. He's out thinking after a tough legislative session. Guess what? What did the corporate media do? What did AP do? What did CNN do? They started putting up headlines, quote, mystery solved. No further questions. Mystery solved. Governor Sanford, he's hiking the Appalachian Trail. It's a mountain out of a molehill. Did anybody stop? Well, yes, somebody stopped to notice. Josh Marshall and those folks over at Talking Points Memo, the bloggers, we noticed. We noticed that in those statements from the Sanford's staffers, that they hadn't actually talked to the governor. That when they were saying, he's hiking the Appalachian Trail, everything is fine, they never said, well, we talked to him, and he's doing fine, and he wonders what's going on. They didn't say that until, what was it, I think Tuesday morning, when they said, oh, we've talked to the governor, and he, what was the quote, he's surprised at the concern that's been expressed. Well, did they make up that quote as well, or did they really talk to him? But I can tell you what, as of Monday, they hadn't talked to him. It was clear from their statements they hadn't talked to them. The bloggers noticed they hadn't talked to him. AP, on the other hand, apparently didn't notice. AP, CNN, mystery solved, everything fine. No, it wasn't fine. And, well, we found out today in a teary press conference, a bizarre press conference, where there was people standing behind him laughing. This was the most, don't look at it. Did you see it? They were giggling behind these. I don't know if they were staffers. I don't know who they were. I don't know who's managing this thing. I suspect the staffers are going to be submitting their resignation right away because he made them look like complete idiots. But yeah, there was people standing behind him laughing at the press conference. And frankly, it's not a funny story. It's a sad story. That's a little funny. But, you know, he's got four kids. He's apparently deeply in love, it seems, with this woman from... girl from Ipanema, or wherever she's from down there. And I'm sure we'll be playing that song later. But lies. It was all lies. And that is what... where is he here? The lieutenant governor was not happy about any of this. He has been critical for days that the governor's staff had been lying about Sanford's whereabouts. The Republican critic of his has been saying this is nothing but lies, lies, lies. He's been saying it for days. Turns out it was lies. Well, we're going to take your calls on that, I suspect, later in the show. But I want to get to Sybelle Edmonds, the whistleblower, who's going to speak, who's going to take your calls today, tonight. So if you want to talk to Sybelle, we'll fill you in on who she is if you don't know who she is. But if you want to talk to Sybelle, our number tonight and all this week, don't use Mike Malloy's number. Use our number, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. The most gagged woman in America is how Sybelle Edmonds has been described by the ACLU. She was the first, I believe she was the very first, person to have the state secrets privilege used against her by the Bush administration. She was a translator after 9/11. And what she heard, well, we still don't know all of what she heard. Maybe she'll tell us some of that tonight, because she's been gagged and she's been trying to tell the story to the media who didn't give a damn. The same media who were so incurious. Is that a word? Uncurious? Incurious? They didn't care. The same media that didn't care when Mark Stanford's staff said, oh, everything's fine. There's nothing to worry about here. These aren't the droids you're looking for. The same media had no interest when Sybelle Edmonds wanted to tell her story. When she said, and she announced it at bradblog.com, that she would speak to any broadcast media, any mainstream major broadcast media, news network, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, she would have gone on and told her story. Anyone who wanted to take it. And she was risking going to jail, by the way, in announcing she would do that. And no bites. Not from this country. This admission, this announcement that we ran at Bradblog was about a year or two ago, made front page headlines all over the world. They know who Sybelle is. Made front page headlines all over the world. Back here, nada. Nobody. They didn't care. I actually spoke. There was one nibble from a network affiliate, a network news outlet. Maybe later I'll say who they were. Network news outlet who was interested, but they didn't want to meet her conditions. Her conditions were basically, I want to tell my story, and if you don't, you can put it out live, or you can put it out close to live, but no editing, no taking the time to go and check it with the government so they have the time to throw me in jail and spike your story before it runs. She wanted to, you know, run right away. And so I sort of served as a mediator. And one of the folks I talked to at one of these networks said to me, well, Brad, we can't just put what she has to say right out on the air without reporting it. Well, you know, without verifying it. I said, what the hell are you talking about? You do this every damn day. You do it with Dick Cheney. You let him show up and tell any damn lies he wants. You don't verify that. You let Karl Rove, George Bush, Condi Rice, all of these guys parade on your cameras and give any damn lie they want. You don't check that. Why won't you check with Sybelle Edmonds? Well, it turns out Sybelle Edmonds, her story, her explosive story, was finally reported by the London Times, the Sunday Times in London, at least parts of it. And some of it had to do with the fact that nuclear weapons, nuclear secrets, were being sold to foreign countries, that top high-ranking officials, Republicans and some Democrats, were looking the other way, were doing nothing about it. And I'm talking about top officials. Mark Grossman comes to mind. I believe he was the second at the State Department for the last few years. We'll ask Sybelle about that, see what she can tell us and what she cannot, although this a lot of this came out in the Sunday Times. this same administration that was telling us about WMDs, we had to go to war, we had to protect our secrets. The same administration was looking the other way as our secrets were being stolen from nuclear bases and sold to AQ Khan out there in Pakistan, who in turn sold them to North Korea, to Iran, to Libya. And instead of allowing this information to come out, what did the Bush administration do? They slapped a gag order on her. They made her the most gagged woman in America. And when she tried to protest this, when she took her case forward, what did they do? The government said, well, we're against that idea. We're against this case moving forward at all because of the state secrets privilege, and we're not even going to allow Sybil Edmonds or her attorneys to sit in the courtroom while we argue this case. They have to leave. They had to leave the courtroom, and the government made their case, and when the news came back, it was like, oh, state secrets, you're out. No case. Took it all the way to the Supreme Court. And they said, oh, sorry, can't hear it. State secrets. We're going to be talking to Ms. State Secrets, Sybil Edmonds, and taking your calls on that and her new project, Project Expose MSM. Yes, she is naming names. She's asked whistleblowers to contact her with their stories, their naming names, of folks in the media who have betrayed their trust, folks like Michael Isikoff at Newsweek, folks at Time Magazine. She's already run the first two reports. We're going to ask her about that and oh so much more, whatever is on your mind. 9/11. Give us a call, 877-520-1150. Sybil Edmonds, coming up next. I'm Brad, in for Mike. Much more. Stick with us. Friedman in for Malloy all week long. Joining me now, or momentarily here, Sybil Edmonds is going to be with us, and we're going to take your calls throughout the hour. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. What Sybil can and can't say, I will leave up to her. I know what I can and can't say. We'll see what she decides she can and can't say. We'll talk about what I talked about before the break, her whistleblower revelations, working as an FBI translator after 9/11. Going to get her take on the Iranian elections, by the way. She is, I believe, either Iranian or her father is Iranian, one or the other. We'll find out. And, of course, Project Expose MSM. Sybil Edmonds is the founder and director of National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. She worked as a language specialist for the FBI following 9/11. During her work with the Bureau, she discovered and reported serious acts of security breaches, cover-ups, and intentional blocking of intelligence that had national security implications. After she reported these acts to the FBI management, she was retaliated against by the FBI, fired in March of 2002. And, of course, since that time, court proceedings on her case have been blocked by the assertion of state secret privilege by the Bush administration first, and I believe that carries on with the Obama administration. We'll find out in a second. The Congress of the U.S. has looked at her case. She's because she's been gagged and prevented from any discussion of her case, she hasn't been able to talk about it since she first addressed Congress. That material that she gave to Congress has since been retroactively declassified, no, reclassified by the Department of Justice. She is also a Penn American, George Washington University Penn American Center Award winner of Newman's own First Amendment Award. Her new blog site is 123 Real Change. Her new project is Project Expose MSM. Sybelle Edmonds, how are you? Oh, there we go. Sybelle Edmonds, welcome to the Molloy Show.
Good evening, Brad. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And, of course, I yammered on with the intro so long. We're going to have to take a break in a second, but we'll have you for the whole next part of the hour. I don't know if you heard the intro. Did I accurately bring us up to the point where we are somewhat at now as far
Absolutely.
As the background?
In fact, I don't have anything to add.
That's it?
Marvelous job, because you've been following this case for how many years now? What, 5 years? 6 years?
Too many years. Rub it in. Well, if we have nothing to talk about, that's it. Thank you, Sybelle Edmonds, ladies and gentlemen. Well, real quick, what we can get in, I think, before we have to go to a break here in about 30 seconds, Sybelle, is my question about the Obama administration. Have they continued the state secrets privilege that was applied during the Bush administration to your case?
Well, no, they didn't have to, because the case was over. In 2006, once we took it all the way up to the Supreme Court, as far as the courts were concerned, and therefore the state secrets privilege, the case was over. Mm-hmm. But there is no case. There is no active court case to invoke the state secrets privilege again or continue it. However, with the Congress, it's a different story, because Congress all along had the ability to have hearings on this and have me testify, have the witnesses testify, and they were not subject to the state secrets privilege, and they never used their authority, their jurisdiction, their power to do it.
Hold the thought, Sybelle. We're going to pick it up right there after this break, and it'll be a nice long segment, all right? Sorry about the short segment here. Brad Friedman, in for Molloy. Call us, 877-520-1150 for Sybelle Edmonds. We'll be right back.
Interrupting Brad Friedman's most excellent program. Wait, it's my program, and Brad is filling in. Uh-oh, but he's so good at this. Hey, I'll be back June 29th, and not a moment too soon.
Yeah, rub it in, Mike. Brad Friedman back on the Molloy Show. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Giving out that number because it is different than Mike Molloy's usual number. So if you want to reach us, you got to dial that one. We're speaking with Sybelle Edmonds, the noted FBI translator hired after 9/11, heard some stuff on the tapes there that made her quite concerned about a number of things. A couple of them, and we need to reset and hit some of these. The corruption within the translation unit at the FBI. And Sybelle, this is something that I believe you have talked about, so correct me if I'm wrong. The corruption, the concern you had, folks, spies, actually, within the translation unit. Is that correct?
Correct. Those were concerns, but then they were addressed by the Justice Department's Inspector General's office, so mm-hmm. they've been confirmed espionage cases, security breach cases within the FBI.
And so, good. The IG confirmed it, and action was taken on those cases, right?
No.
What?
No action, of course.
No action. So the folks that you had concerns about that might have been, what, ignoring certain documents in the Turkish translation department, ignoring certain documents, not translating them or mistranslating them, right? Those folks were not, are they still working there, Sybelle?
Last I heard, they were. But again, as I said, they are no longer considered a concern. Two senators, Senator Grassley and Senator Leahy, 6 years ago declared them as clear cases of espionage.
And so, obviously, you're being sarcastic when you're saying they're no longer a concern. The senators declared them a clear case of espionage. The FBI IG report declared that serious concerns, I believe, was the word they used. And no action was taken. And these guys, one of them, as I recall, was actually, what was it, the daughter of a target of one of these FBI investigations.
Well, that case was not related to my FBI work. That case was reported to the media by other whistleblowers, translators from the FBI's language division that dealt with Pakistan Urdu translation. Mm-hmm. That case had to do with this general who worked for General Mahmoud, ISI, in Washington, D.C., Pakistani embassy. And the counterintelligence for the FBI was and is targeting that institution and the ISI agents in the United States. So they ended up hiring and giving security clearance to this general's daughter, who ended up listening to her father and her father's colleagues and covered up for them.
So she was literally listening to her father on some of these wiretaps?
Correct, because she worked under counterintelligence, and the counterintelligence targeted the ISI entities under the cover of the Pakistani attaché.
And the ISI being the Pakistani intelligence agency akin to our CIA, I
Correct.
Guess.
Thank you.
Was she, the other one, Ken Dickerson, I believe. That was not the same case, correct?
No, that
was a different
case. That had to do with the Turkish Translation Division.
Right.
And again, that case was the one that was confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And with that case, she was also married to Lieutenant Colonel, who worked for...
Did we lose you, Sibel?
Hello.
Oh, there we go. I think we lost you for a second. She was married to a who?
At the time, he was a major who was working for Richard Pearl and Douglas Feith in Pentagon on Central Asian issues, and they were both members of organizations that were the targets of FBI's investigations.
Is she still working there?
No. Actually, they fled the country. They left in 2002 after my case became public, and they haven't been back as far as I know.
Okay. And yet, there are still some of the people that you had concerns about that are still working within that actual unit.
Again, I haven't been in touch with people inside, but last time I heard, some of those people were still working. In fact, some of them have been promoted.
Of course they have. And all of this is no small potatoes, because these cases we're talking about, these weren't, bribery, extortion, numbers running. We're talking about some pretty serious things, as we later learned from the UK Sunday Times, who were willing to report on this while the U.S. media was not. We're talking about nuclear secrets and people who were essentially being, what was the word you used? They were being hooked by foreign agents, bribed essentially, and nuclear secrets were going out all over the world, and that is in fact how allegedly that A.Q. Khan ended up with a nuclear bomb in Pakistan.
Correct.
All right. So this is serious business, and there seems to have been, is it possible, Sibel Edmonds, in your case, that there was accountability brought that we just don't know about it, that some of these folks were cleared out, but it remained a secret. Is that possible?
No, because you all know the individuals and where they are today. I mean, all you have to do, take a look at Mark Grossman and Richard Pearl and Douglas Feith and General Scowcroft, and you will see that they are still continuing their businesses as usual.
Yeah, and one of those folks is actually Dennis Hastert, the former Speaker of the House,
right,
who has now gone to work for the Turkish government.
Isn't that amazing? Because,
yeah.
as you know, in 2005, yep. August 2005, Vanity Fair
yep.
had a six, seven page article on this issue and the fact that several FBI agents and DOJ officials as sources and some congressional people confirmed to this reporter, David Rose,
mm-hmm.
that at the time, Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert, was the recipient of various briberies and other illegal conduct. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And this came out, and Dennis Hastert didn't do anything. They didn't go and sue Vanity Fair. In fact, they didn't really issue a real denial. And as you know, he resigned a year later, and now he works actually for the Turkish lobby that the Vanity Fair article named as the place, one of the entities that was giving Mr. Hastert his rights.
Oh, they actually, Vanity Fair had named that particular firm?
Correct, because they work with the American Turkish Council and the ATA,
mm-hmm.
and they are the clients for the lobbying firms that he is working for today. And the government of Turkey, of course, they are now registered, this lobbying firm for Hastert is registered under Foreign Agents Registration Act. And again, there's been nothing in the press saying, oh yeah, this came up.
Well, when Vanity Fair reported this, and it was an exhaustive expose, frankly, I can't remember how many thousands of words it was, but I mean, they went into great detail. After the Vanity Fair story, did the other media, AP, New York Times, Washington Post, did they pick the story up in any way to advance what he had to say? I mean, just amongst the many remarkable things he had to say.
Not one.
And they were alleging the Speaker of the House, this was at the time that he was the Speaker of the House, and they were alleging that he was accepting thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars from these Turkish foreign agents, correct?
And Brad, this was not based on my testimony. This article was written
mm-hmm.
with really strict conditions on the author, on the investigative journalist. Usually they require 2 to 3 sources. In this case, for this particular case, because the Speaker of the House was involved, because
right.
of the case being high profile, they required more than 4 or 5 sources. So that's what this reporter got. And you know how they usually do fact-checking after the article is submitted by the reporter.
Right.
Well, in this case, they did triple fact-checking. They did it 3 times, going back to every single source. And so they really did their homework. And again, this is not an alternative media outlet. You were looking at Vanity Fair.
Vanity Fair.
They have 2 million
right.
Circulation number, and yet not one newspaper or network channel or cable, nobody reported on it. There was this deafening silence, and you reported on it, so you should go.
I did report on it at Brad Blog, and you say nobody reported on it. I think what you mean is nobody in this country, because
absolutely.
The story did get picked up in, did it get picked up in Turkey?
Absolutely. In Turkey, it ended up becoming the front page story for a week or so on every single newspaper, not one, not two, but every single newspaper. And it was covered by CNN Turk in Turkey. And it was covered by all their networks and the radio stations and everywhere. And nothing here.
So CNN actually covered it, just their Turkish language version of their cable channel.
Correct. Yeah.
Unbelievable. What do you, and we're going to get into this in a bit, your new project where you're essentially outing the folks in the media who aren't doing their jobs, Project Expose MSM, but what do you attribute the fact that nobody, after this stunning expose in Vanity Fair, and of course several years later when you allowed me to announce at Brad Blog that you were ready to tell all, to what do you attribute that the U.S. media did not then pick up the story, has still not today picked up the story?
Right. There are many factors, and if people go to the website 123realchange.blogspot.com, I have done several series of 5, 4 or 5 part series on the various factors contributing to this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have everybody has been talking about the mainstream media today becoming the extension of the government. They've been this way for a long time, but the extent of it is mind-boggling today. And also, you have lazy journalism. You have, to a certain degree, actually to a large degree this reliance on the government, inside government forces, high level officials, meaning let's say a reporter, well-known reporter, let's say with the New York Times or Newsweek, has a high level source in the Justice Department, and getting their stories and getting their confirmations or denials from those people, and in many cases being told by their sources not to run a story. And we have had several cases of that. And in this for this project, my case is only one that we have had as a report, but I am going to report that I have been reporting other cases. As you know, the last one was on Time Magazine and the Drug Enforcement Agency, DEA agents, and these are high-level DEA agents who reported a very, very serious case with all the documents, the supporting documents, and you're looking at 3-4 high-level DEA agents, and these were not what they labeled as disgruntled employees. You're looking at SES level, senior executive level, special agents in charge with DEA, taking the story, explosive story, to the Time Magazine with all the backing documents, supporting documents, and they were censored. You know, the story was blacked out.
Somebody blacked it out, and yeah, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. Was it that they were lazy, didn't bother to report it, or there were reporters who wanted to report it, but they were held back by their bosses, by the government, perhaps, who said, oh, no, don't run this story. It's too explosive.
And we don't know the answers. And sometimes some of this stuff gets to be known publicly. As you know, with the AT&T whistleblower, he went to the LA Times, and he gave the story to this reporter, and the reporter was solid. He was good. The reporter gave it to his editor, and the editor, what did he do? He notified the NSA and told them that they had a source who had given them the story. And then, based on the instruction the editor got, the LA Times editor got, he sat on the story for 5 months and blacked it out, didn't publish.
Was that LA Times or New York Times, Sibel?
No, this was LA Times.
Okay, hold the thought. I got to get to a break. Sibel Edmonds here with us for the rest of the hour. We've got some lines open. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. We'd love to have you ask your questions of Sibel. I got plenty for her, but if you got any, now's the time to ask them. Hang on, Sibel. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Much more right after this. Show Brad. Well, that's good. Good job, Tony. Brad in for Malloy, going to be in jailbreak. Speaking with Sibel Edmonds, former FBI translator, whistleblower, founder and director of the National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. She's telling her story, and we're taking your calls at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Not Malloy's usual number. Don't bother them. They're on vacation. Bother us. We'd love to talk to you. Sibel, I have more questions for you, but so do our callers. You want to hit some of those?
Sure.
All right. What's that, Dan? Okay. Let me get to some of these calls. And where am I? Jeremy. There we go. Jeremy in Huntington Beach. Welcome to the show, Jeremy. I have a question for Sibel Edmonds.
I actually did have somewhat of a statement slash question. That is, we seem to have a kind of a long history of arming our enemies and arming both sides of a conflict. Clear back to World War II, I think, what was it, Union Banking or something like that? Prescott Bush, his bank or whatever, was laundering money for the Nazis. Of course, you could forget the Iran-Contra incident. We were arming Iran and Iraq. And needless to say, Saddam Hussein, we were arming him to the teeth. He was a nobody before we got our hands on him, gave him all his weapons, chemical, biological, even pre-nuclear precursors in some cases, from what I read. It just seems to me that the most paranoid part of me seems to think, you got to wonder if there are some people inside of our government or certain Western companies that actually want us to be defeated. Been understood that, if a real defeat in military conflict would welcome basically a it would kill democracy.
Jeremy, let me phrase that in a form of a question, since we're coming up to the top of the hour. Sibel, can it be that rather than a few rogue bad apples, if you will, even though they're incredibly high-ranking bad apples, can it be that this is actually the policy of this government somehow to allow these nuclear secrets and so forth to get out around the country?
Well, you're looking at a business, you know. You're looking at the military-industrial complex, and that's a business, okay? And we sustain, and it sustains itself with conflict and war. I mean, think about it. Right now, if we didn't have this conflict that we created ourselves, ourselves in Afghanistan, and then let's say it was in late 1990s, we had the Albania and Kosovo. Every single one of these sustains the military-industrial complex. I mean, think about a very peaceful world. These conflicts and wars. Who are you going to sell it to?
But would these guys
go out of business?
Well, it's one thing to have a continue the war, but would these guys be psychotic enough to allow to want to arm some of these countries with nuclear weapons just to keep this military-industrial complex going, Sibel?
But then you're looking at a totally different issue. I mean, when you're looking at, let's say, Pakistan with the nuclear and obtaining the nuclear facilities, and
right.
This is with A.Q. Khan in 1980s. This was when everything was played, every single strategy was based on the Cold War. And it was, okay, Pakistan, ally, and every country would want to have this. I mean, back then said it was deterrent, and we were going to use it as deterrent. Why other countries can't use that as deterrent? And who has used these nuclear weapons throughout the history of the nuclear industry except us?
Well,
we're the only nation that has a history of, like, really going and using it with our Hiroshima.
Yep. All right.
So therefore, these countries, they have their own set of reasons to acquire it. You have the military-industrial complex with selling the business and conflict. And during the Cold War, we looked the other ways when our allies, so-called allies, obtained this technology. And in some cases, some people within our governments made money off of it.
Some people made a lot of money. Sibel Edmonds. Sibel, can you stick around into the next hour with us?
Sure.
All right. Sibel Edmonds, she's going to stick around. Take your calls, 877-520-1150. A lot of you hanging on hold. We're going to get to you. We still have room to get other folks in, though. 877-520-1150. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy all this week, speaking with Sibel Edmonds. David Swanson's going to join us later to talk about torture accountability. Oh, yeah, it's that kind of night. Don't worry, we'll cheer you up with Mark Sanford soon. Stick with us.
Hey, Two Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Well, not here. Brad is here, filling in for me and doing a damn good job. Yes,
oh, thanks,
I'll be
Mike.
Back June 29th. Play nice while I'm gone. Keep it lit.
Don't play so nice, but do keep it lit. Brad in for Malloy all week long. Live from Los Angeles, California, K-Talk AM 1150. Thank you for letting us broadcast out of here. Give us a call if you'd like to talk to Sibel Edmonds, the FBI whistleblower, FBI translator, turned whistleblower, co-founder, boy, oh boy, Brad, get it together, founder and director of the National Security Whistleblowers Coalition, who has been gagged for years by the Bush administration, and, well, now she's talking. If you want to know what she has to say, give us a call, 877-520-1150. Sibel, the lines have filled up here. You want to try to fly through a whole bunch of calls?
Oh, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. You want the toughest ones first? Let's go to Christine in Los Angeles. Welcome to the Malloy Show. You got a question for Sibel, Christine.
Hey, Brad. It's Christine from KPFK. I wanted to say I couldn't think of a better substitute teacher for Malloy than you.
Bless you, Christine, and good to hear from you. Thank you, dear.
Yes, the question I had for this brave woman, because she is, knowing that the head of the ISI had, I believe, wired Mohammed Atta $100,000, and knowing the criminals that we have in the Bush-Cheney administration, and many Americans questioning 9/11, I got to ask the question to Sabell. What are her thoughts on 9/11 possibly being an inside job?
Thank you, Christine. I won't tell your bosses that you're listening to K-Talk instead of your own station. Thanks, Christine.
Thank you.
All right, Sabell, that's the question that comes up for me the most, of course. 9/11 was an inside job. What do you think?
Well, as I have done for the past 7-8 years, I have basically stuck with what I know firsthand directly. My own knowledge, based on my own experience, based on what I obtained, which is not a lot, but it's extremely important. And to answer a question and say, was it an inside job? It would be, first of all, it would be preposterous for me to make that call. But what I can tell you is, based on what we know already, and these are the confirmed cases, you know, you're going to have Colleen Rowley on your show.
Yes,
well,
she's coming up tomorrow.
Exactly. Well, you look at her and her case, and then you look at the Phoenix memo with the other FBI agent in Phoenix office, the Phoenix field office.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the FBI agent Wright in Chicago, and you look at that case. And then, I don't know if you read James Bamford's latest book, What We Obtained from Yemen, NSA obtained before September 11,
mm-hmm.
because we were following two of these hijackers in... Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah. In Yemen. Well, you put all these things, all this information that have, you know, all this information that have come from various agencies in one place, and you look at it and you say, wow. You know, it's very easy to write off things when you have one or two slip-offs and, you know, attribute certain things to bureaucratic bunglings.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes beyond that. Now, what is that? Again, as I said, I won't be able to answer that question. But what I can answer is, yeah, we had this 9/11 commission that was formed. And first, we had Henry Kissinger appointed to be the chairman of it.
Right.
It tells you what they had in mind, what kind of commission they had in mind, which was going to be cosmetic. It was pretty obvious. Then we had the final commission with a bunch of people with conflict of interest. And we didn't get anything. As you see, people have been gagged. A lot of things have been classified. And you would think, well, why people would go so far to cover up bureaucratic bungling? Again, that doesn't mean, hey, this was an inside job. But what it tells you is there are a lot of things that we don't know. There are a lot of things that our government established, but they don't want us to know. I mean, the recent thing just came out a few days ago with the case against Saudi Arabia with the 9/11 family members. Well, today or yesterday, it made it to the front page of the New York Times with Eric Lischbau. Okay, so now the government, our government, the Justice Department under Obama is going and saying, no, you can't, and you can't get this information because you want to protect Saudi Arabia. Well, protect against what? So those are the questions that have not been answered, and those questions that have been answered, nothing has been done about it, and no explanation has been, you know, have been given to us. So we have all these issues, and there is no simple answer, but one simple answer is, yes, we are facing a lot of cover-up.
And so,
I want to know why, and I'm sure you want to know why, too.
I don't really care. let me get to, well, actually, so it's fair to say, in your case, then, that you don't have necessarily information that you haven't been able to disclose that reveals that 9/11 was an inside job. You just have, like I do, concerns about the information that we have, the bad information that we have, and why you know, all these unanswered questions.
Here and say, I have information about things that our government has lied to our people, to us, not to me, because I know. For example, to say that, all right, since the fall of the Soviet Union, we ceased all our relationship, intimate relationship with bin Laden and Taliban, and those things can be proven as lies very easily based on the information they classified in my case, because we did carry very very intimate relationship with these people, and it involves Central Asia, and all the way up to September 11. I know you're going to say, oh my God, there were this, you know, we went there and we bombed the medical factory in 1990s during Clinton. We declared the most wanted. And what I'm telling you is, with those groups, we had operations in Central Asia, and that relationship, using them as we did during the Afghan and Soviet conflict, we used them all the way until September 11th.
What are you able to speak about in more detail on that material that was classified?
People have written about it based on the interviews conducted and based on other people talking about it. So you know what? It's not very difficult to put the two and two together in this. There's so much information that, of course, our mainstream media has not reported, but there have been some good books written on the topic, and that is what we have been doing, what we were doing in those years, all the way on until that day of September 11th in Central Asia, in what they call as East Turkestan,
right.
Where we're talking about the Uyghurs, and with Bin Laden, and via Turkey, and these are the Turkish actors, because Central Asian countries, they're Turkic-speaking, you know, they have the same heritage as the Republic of Turkey, say they share the same language, the same culture, and we, as a country, United States, used Turkey along with actors from Pakistan and in Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia to carry out a lot of operations. Russians have talked about it because they have been screaming about it. Again, it hasn't. Those things have not been reported. But what we have on this, they have been classified. They've been using sensitive diplomatic relations, protecting Turkey, protecting Israel, protecting Pakistan, protecting Saudi Arabia. Well, that does not say, okay, 9/11 was an inside job, but that tells people, would tell people, the information they have gathered, they have classified, a lot of things that will bring us maybe closer to the answer and why we have been lying about it, why our government has been lying about it.
All right, don't be so engaging or I'll never get through all these callers. And don't badmouth Turkey. I got word from a Turkish lobbyist today, a guy, Dennis Hastert, who said they're great, so don't beat up on them. Let me get to Patty in North Dakota. Rame? North Dakota, Patty?
Yes, it's called Rame.
All right. Well, welcome. What's your question for Sabella Edmonds?
Well, I think you are a wonderful, wonderful heroine. Now, how do we help you, Sabelle?
Well, thank you. Nice to meet you.
I'm honored.
Well, I don't have a case. I did need lots of help, and thanks to our mainstream media, we didn't get it. I had the ACLU fighting right with me and taking this case all the way to the Supreme Court. And back then, I really needed backing from the people with action to demand. Demand the justice, the accountability in this case. And then I started this campaign to trying to get the Congress to have hearing, because they have the authority, they have the power, they have, it's their duty. They've been entrusted with the oversight.
I called back then.
Right, and they had not done it, and they didn't do it. So that case is closed. So there is nothing really that I'm asking people to do for me. I don't have a case. That case has been over. It's been several years. It's been 3 years. And we have so many other important cases that nothing has been done about it. We have 2,000 pictures depicting atrocious torture committed with our tax money and sanctioned by our representatives. Therefore, we are the ones who have committed that crime through our representatives who speak for us. And with our tax money, we have NSA illegal wiretapping that has been established. You know, people know about it.
Nothing
has been done about it. So there are a lot of issues to do things about.
I got
to
get to a break. Thanks for that call, Patty. I appreciate it. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to be done, and the people have been making noise. And And it is troubling that we, you know, don't seem to be getting these folks to pay attention and to take some action. Sybelle Edmonds is sticking with us. We're going to try to get through a bunch of calls in this next segment. It will be short. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Oh, stop by bradblog.com where we are chatting in the chat room. The blog item right at the top. Hit comments. Come on in. Say hello. More with Sybelle right after this.
And you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. And you may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife.
Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy all this week, speaking with Sybelle Edmonds, FBI translator, former FBI translator and whistleblower, taking your calls. Sybelle, we didn't even get to ask you about Iran, and you were born in Iran, or your father was born in Iran?
No, my father was half Iranian. I was born in Iran, even though I was not given the citizenship at the time because we were the citizen of Turkey. And my father was there to open the first burn center hospital in Iran. He was a surgeon. And so I lived there for the first about 3 years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went back to Turkey. And when I was seven, we had the anarchy period in Turkey.
Right.
And they asked my father to establish another big hospital. So we went back, and this time we were in Tehran.
And we have, actually, I could go into details and keep you on all night, but we're going to come to the bottom
right.
of the hour.
I have lived in both countries. I'm from Turkey. My father was half Iranian, and I have lived in Turkey, Azerbaijan, and Iran in three countries.
And you want to give us, are you able to give us a thought on what's going on in Iran in about 10 or 15 seconds so we can hit a bunch of calls before you have to go at the bottom of the hour?
Oh, I will. Well, instead of then trying to limit it to 10, 15 seconds, I will just ask people to try to separate the facts from what we are being presented with. And that is, there are two sides to each story. And now we are hearing about violence against the protesters. I'm in touch with a lot of Iranian people in Iran, people who are even protesting, and the Iranian community here in the United States. And a lot of it is actually happening from the protesters. They have been smashing cars. So there are a lot of things happening. There are a lot of agendas out there. And this is a great thing for the progressives and the protesters in Iran. But on the other hand, it is going to be it's going to be exploited. And don't let the certain people with the agendas, the establishment, exploit this. And don't make it very easy and possible for them, which we have been doing, not only through the mainstream media, but unfortunately out there within the blogosphere, certain people have been catalyst to what the establishment has been seeking for a long time on Iran.
Don't blame me, Sybelle. Let's go to Larry from Phoenix. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Oh, thank you.
Very quickly, too, because we got to get to the bottom of the hour. Quick.
Okay. I don't think she's surprised anymore that editors would sit on stories, because that's an integral part of all the organized crime we have in the United States, and people like the Bush family seem to be at the bottom of all of it, especially all the domestic trade and the opium and the cocaine and the methamphetamine.
Fair enough. You have a question, Sybelle?
Yeah, has she read anything like about Michael Levine and...
Levine, let me answer this
thanks,
very
Claire.
Quickly. Michael Levine is a member of my organization, National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. I have about more than, actually, 150 national security whistleblowers from DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency, FBI, CIA, NSA. I have been on Mike Levine's show. In fact, the first sample case that Brad and I reported was regarding Michael Levine in 1980s and how the Newsweek magazine and the two reporters there got the story. They at least received it, but they didn't follow up, even though it was a huge story, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for Mike, and that's a solid story, and you can go to my website and read it.
Which is 123realchange.blogspot.com, and Sybelle has been cross-posting over at bradblog.com. Check out, search Project Expose MSM. Let me see if I can get in one more quick call. Phil in Central Florida, give us a 15-second question, sir.
Oh, yes. Thank you both. And I just wanted to say that, you know, the military-industrial complex, the media and all that, the powers that be, Bob McElvain of 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows said this 9/11 is that they're the powers that be Achilles' heel. They got too greedy. And I just want to share some hope that we've got this alternative media. We've got DVDs, blogs, internets. And we can beat these guys. We can take them down. And, you know, not to debate 9/11, but if you have one working eyeball and two brain cells to rub together and you look into it, you know, the answers will be there.
Thanks,
Thank
Phil.
You so much.
You bet. Thank you, Phil. Sorry, Sibel, any last thoughts here before we have to check out commercial radio? You know how that goes.
Well, the whole thing is, knowledge, knowing about stuff, putting the information out is one step. And I'm not talking about 9/11. I'm talking about all these issues, whether it's the torture, whether it's the NSA illegal wiretapping, or the state secrets privilege. And we have the internet. We have a great tool. And a lot of people know. The biggest problem we are facing is a lack of action and not being able to channel this, translate it into action. You can sit down and talk and scream on the blogs. You know, we can put all this information and email people, but if we can't at some point translate it into real action, go out there, do something, it's not going to worth anything. It's not going to mean anything.
Sibel Edmonds.
We have respect for the Iranian protest.
Sibel Edmonds, 123realchange.blogspot.com. Back with David Edmonds, David Swanson right after this. Thanks, Sibel.
Thank you.
Mike Malloy here interrupting Brad Friedman's most excellent program. Wait, it's my program, and Brad is filling in. Uh-oh, but he's so good at this. Hey, I'll be back June 29th, and not a moment too soon.
Not a moment too soon. What the... Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. We've got a discussion going on in the chat room. We welcome your thoughts there. The lovely and rascible Agent 99 is your host there. So stop on by. Give us your thoughts. And if you have any calls this hour for David Swanson, peace activist. And where's my... I'll find it here. Concerning Torture Accountability Day. Did you know tomorrow was Torture Accountability Day? Of course you did. You saw it all over CNN and MSNBC and Fox News particularly. They've been putting out the word why first they were talking to us about the teabagging, and now they're talking to us about torture accountability, right? And not so much. My next guest is David Swanson, co-founder of After Downing Street, Washington director of Democrats.com, board member of Progressive Democrats of America, Voters for Peace, and Backbone Campaign, author of the forthcoming book, Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. And by the way, I should add, before I bring David, if you disagree with me, with him, with anybody you hear on this show, no, we don't do what Hannity does. We don't leave out people who disagree. We'd love to hear from you. Wingnuts, bring it on. David Swanson, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. Whoop. There we go. I'll figure this out by the end of the week. David, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thanks.
How are you doing, sir?
Good to hear you. I'm doing fine.
All right. Well, let's see. Torture Accountability Day. What? When? I didn't notice it on CNN. What happened? I don't understand. When is that?
Yeah, we're working with Fox on this one, so thank goodness that there are decent radio shows and websites, because a lot of people do know about it with
good.
No thanks to the so-called mainstream media, which never does a bit of good. But this is something that's been put together by dozens of human rights groups and peace groups and people that you're familiar with, from PDA to Code Pink to Amnesty International to Peace Action to the world can't wait to...
to my organization, Velvet Revolution.
Velvet Revolution,
that's right.
Voters for Peace, et cetera, et cetera. Endless list. In fact, you can go to you can go to accountabilityfortorture.com, where the four is a numeral four.
Right.
Accountabilityfortorture.com, and find the whole list of who's involved. And we have events in major cities all over the country tomorrow, Thursday, June 25th, and I will be at one in Washington, D.C. that ought to be pretty exciting.
Which meets at John Marshall Park at 11 a.m., and you'll be marching to the Justice Department. There's also events in San Francisco, Pasadena, Thousand Oaks, California, Boston, Salt Lake City, good, Seattle, Portland, Las Vegas, Honolulu. Check out accountabilityfortorture.com. All right, why do we need accountability for torture, David Swanson? My understanding was we were supposed to look forward, not back. That's what Barack Obama told us.
Yeah, that's what I told the cops last night, and they wouldn't listen to me. the thing is, you know, if our federal government treated torture the way they treat us in planning these demonstrations, us not being the good protesters who exist only in Iran, we'd be fine. I mean, we had a proposal to demonstrate waterboarding with volunteers in John Marshall Park in Washington, D.C.,
right.
And we're told we would be prosecuted for torture if we did such
a
thing. Now, we are...
Wait, hang on a second. They really told you that you can't do a waterboarding demonstration because you'll be prosecuted? For it?
Yes. If, you know, we've been lobbying the Justice Department all these months to even consider enforcing our laws against torture, which, by the way, is illegal. Little did we know that the Department of the Interior, the Park Service, has got its act together, and we should have been over there all this time demanding justice. Instead, we have reports every week, if not every day, that torture is ongoing, that there is torture in Bagram, in Guantanamo, in Iraq, and elsewhere, and we're told over and over again that the official policy is not to torture. You know, we're soon going to have this report from the president's task force on how to do interrogations. Spencer Ackman was blogging about this today. That is going to really walk a fine line between actually obeying laws and torturing. And
you're talking about a new report? On how to do...
How to do interrogations. Remember when he first came into office, the president said, we don't torture, and
right.
I mean it, unlike the last guy who said, we don't torture, and I
right.
mean it. And he created a task force to decide how we would interrogate people.
Right.
So apparently we are going to have new interrogation teams led by the FBI, assisted by the CIA, that are going to do everything except torture. But they are going to distinguish between how they treat those people that they might want to someday prosecute and how they interrogate those people who they're just going to hold forever outside of any rule of law and not prosecute, because they can be interrogated differently. Not that we're going to torture them, but they can be interrogated differently. Read into that what you want. The fact is that torture is ongoing, and it will continue to be ongoing as long as it's a policy choice and not a crime. I mean, this is the horrendous thing. You know, you can credit Cheney and Bush and the gang that's gone, some of them are still around, with the torture. But the outrage now is having turned torture from a crime into a policy choice. And that's all Barack Obama.
What is it we are asking for, then, in this accountability, in asking for accountability? What are you asking for, David Swanson? Do you want to see these guys prosecuted here in the U.S. for war crimes? Do you want to see them brought up under the Geneva Convention at The Hague? What are you asking for in asking for accountability here?
Well, there are halfway measures, right? And there are groups tomorrow in San Francisco and Pasadena and elsewhere in the Ninth Circuit that are going to be filing formal complaints with the Ninth Circuit against Jay Bybee, Chief Torture Lawyer at the Justice Department, now federal judge in the Ninth Circuit. And you can go to After Downing Street and other sites, and there's a link to file your own formal complaint against Jay Bybee. Everybody should. It's not that hard. But in Washington in particular, we are going to be marching to the Justice Department to ask Attorney General Eric Holder to appoint a special prosecutor for torture. And we encourage everybody, and we've got the links and the numbers, to call Eric Holder on Thursday, fax him, email him, and ask him to appoint a special prosecutor. I mean, this is simply to consider the possibility of enforcing the law, because it's there's no dispute anymore that it happens, that torture has gone on. The question is simply whether we will prosecute it, treat it as a crime, rather than a policy that we choose to engage in, or we choose to engage in certain ways or not. And this is a demand that we've been making for many months. As I said, maybe we should have been at the Department of the Interior, but we're going back one more time to the Department of Justice to make this demand.
And it seems that we're being, and by the way, you can give us a call, 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. It seems we've developed an allergy in this country, David, to investigating things that actually matter. Because when we're talking about a special prosecutor or an investigation over torture, when we were talking about it back in the Bush administration concerning impeachment, these are investigations. These are not necessarily prosecutions. If, in fact, what Bush did was not torture, if it was, in fact, perfectly legal, then, in truth, there's really nothing to fear, is there, from an investigation? They'll look into it. They'll find there was no laws were broken here, nothing to worry about, or, as with the impeachment trial, nothing impeachable. They'll throw it out. No worries. Why are we so afraid of investigating and finding out the truth one way or another?
Well, we aren't. As you know, there were polls all during the Bush-Cheney nightmare that a majority of Americans favored investigations and favored impeachments, and these were polls without impeachment being even talked about, even made remotely respectable, so that we would have had overwhelming majorities if something had been happening. And there are polls now that a majority of Americans want accountability for these crimes. But the majority of Americans are not in power, and to their discredit, the majority of Americans do not get in the streets and put their bodies at risk the way Iranians and every other population of the planet does when need be. We sit on our couches, and so there are going to be thousands of Americans saying we won't be good Americans tomorrow and getting in the streets, and we need more of that. But we as I know you understand, we can't attribute the allergy of those in power and those in the corporate media to the Americans without checking to see where the Americans really are. We actually would love to see accountability for these crimes, but Barack Obama wouldn't, and the Attorney General is no longer a servant of the law. He is a servant of the President, or the Emperor, as we might more fittingly call it now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the holdup.
And, the country has changed so much that, we can't hit the streets. We got to get to work. We got both moms and dads when we have them. They're both out there working. Their health care is usually reliant on their jobs. They can't hit the streets and protest the way they do in Iran. And then when they do protest, as we saw before the Iraq War and the lead up to those wars, the biggest protests ever, but they weren't covered in the media, so they didn't exist. We're speaking with David Swanson. We're going to take your calls when we come back here, 877-520-1150. Brad Friedman, in for Mike Malloy. Stop by during the break here. Go to accountabilityfortorture.com. That's the number four, accountabilityfortorture.com. David, is that the best place to get information on tomorrow's Torture Accountability Day?
That's the place.
Accountabilityfortorture.com. Brad, in for Malloy. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Malloy, speaking with David Swanson of AfterDowningStreet.org and so many other places about Torture Accountability Action Day. Take action tomorrow, Thursday, June 25th. Go to Accountability, the number 4, Torture.com to find an event near you. Speak out. Take action. Let's make some noise in this country and hope that someone covers it. And while I'm here, I'll also plug VelvetRevolution.us, my organization that I co-founded. We've got a campaign called Disbar, DisbarTortureLawyers.com, where we have petitioned about 12 different attorneys who were involved in these torture memos. We've petitioned the state bar associations where they are enrolled to basically disbar these attorneys, including Jay Bybee, who's now a federal judge, wrote one of the key torture memos. He's now a federal judge with a lifetime appointment. This guy needs to be disbarred. This guy needs to be impeached. Any extra thoughts on that, David, before I get to these calls? Got a lot of them coming in.
Well, we did just see that the House can impeach a judge and made beautiful arguments for the necessity of impeaching judges with lifetime appointments when they can no longer properly serve. But, you know, it was for sex lies. Yet again, the only thing that anybody ever impeaches for in this country. And that meanwhile, this guy, Jay Bybee, was not only John Yoo's boss, was not only the author and mm-hmm. the authority figure and the signer of numerous torture memos, and 8 more of them that we know of that we haven't seen yet,
right.
but of a memo that gave every president here on out the quote-unquote legal authority to single-handedly launch aggressive wars. So, never, you know, I mean, it's all well and good to focus on this particular, really, relatively little war crime that we call torture. It's an absolute outrage. It's
little
disgusting.
War crime that we prosecuted folks for, that we executed folks for.
I'm not making light of torture, but there are bigger crimes on the table here, and there are over 1 million dead bodies, and there's a connection in that much of the motivation for the key torturing of the mm-hmm. so-called key figures with the waterboarding and so forth was in order to generate false justifications for a war. Some of it after the fact, after we had gotten into Iraq, torturing people to gin up excuses for having gone into Iraq.
Yeah, I want to get some callers before we lose you here, David. And I invited people who disagree with us to give us a call. So let's hear from Howard in Paramus, New Jersey. What's up, Howard?
Hey, I appreciate you taking my call.
Happy to.
Thank you. I'm just trying to understand the logic. I'm listening, trying to look at all points of view. In 1941, obviously, the United States of America had to commit some pretty horrendous acts to defeat the Empire of Japan and defeat Germany, including bombing of civilian populations, especially cities like Dresden. The intelligence at the time showed us that was what was necessary to stop Hitler and to stop him from maybe killing another 40 million people or
okay.
100 million people.
And your point?
And my point being, you know, with all the causes in the world and all the children that suffer and people dying of cancer mm-hmm. and starvation around the world, that there seem to be a number of people like your guest who have taken up the cause of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Abu Zubaydah and a very limited number of detainees.
And Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, who was tortured, was put into a box for 17 hours, buried alive, and forced to confess to a tie between Iraq and al-Qaeda that didn't exist. That sort of person you're talking about?
Well, I'm talking about a very limited number of people, where shortly after 9/11, you know, obviously there was concern there was going to be much more major attacks from groups like al-Qaeda on the U.S.
Are you cool, Howard? If we just rob a few banks, is that okay?
No, I think our policy now, and our policy has always been, that we do not torture. Now, obviously,
except when we do, Howard. Except when we do. And what if you were one of those few people? Would you be cool with the fact that we tortured you?
you know what? If I did what Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has done, which is kill 3,100 Americans and saw off the head of Daniel Pearl, I would have to accept the consequences. I mean, Saddam Hussein tortured thousands, if not millions, of his own people. I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of bodies.
Yeah,
there,
but we had nothing.
And
but
we hear very, very little press about it, that he's picking up body pieces of 13-year-old girls who were raped by Uday Hussein.
Howard, we're still digging up body pieces of folks who we have bombed, up to more than 100,000 folks who are dead because we launched a war for completely specious reasons, and the evidence for which was gained under torture for folks who were innocent, who had nothing to do with Iraq, with Al-Qaeda, or anything else. Doesn't that make sense to you? Don't you understand that we put people to death for this after World War II? The Japanese who tortured, as a matter of fact, one of my bloggers at my blog, his father was tortured by the Japanese. Don't you give a damn, Howard?
Hundreds of thousands of Chinese. I mean, Nanking was one of the, you know, the worst Holocaust ever, you know, to affect the world, perpetrated by the Japanese.
Moral relativism,
granted,
then.
You and I would probably agree that, that the human species needs to advance and not be violent to each other and not kill each other and treat each other humanely, and we would probably agree on 95% of issues about how humans should act in the
world. Thanks for your thoughts. I got to get out to a break, Howard.
I'd like to ask one more quick question.
Well, then hang on the line. I'll take you after the top of the hour. Hang on. David, any thoughts before I let you go here and all the callers here? We'll continue this into the next hour. We're going to have open lines. David, any thoughts in about 20 seconds? I'm sorry, sir.
Well, Brad, he's got a point that there are causes of huge numbers of deaths, but as you noted, this was one of them. We tortured innocent people in order to go in and kill a million people and destroy the rule of law against aggressive war and against torture. And our FBI and our military say that this torturing has caused the deaths of many of the kind of people Howard cares about.
David Swanson, check out accountabilityfortorture.com. Take action. Thanks, David. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Brad.
Much more after this. Stick with us. Stay on the lines. Final hour tonight, 6 minutes after the hour. Glad you're with us. Open lines all this hour, 877-520-1150. We've got a lot of folks hanging on hold here from the previous hour discussing torture accountability. Tomorrow is Torture Accountability Action Day. Take action. Go to accountability, the number 4, torture.com. Find out if there's an event near you. If there's not, make one. Go torture a conservative if they think it's just fine. And I put conservative in quotes. You can't see it, air quotes here on the air. Because anybody who wants to torture, by the way, is not a conservative. Because torture is against the law. And conservatives, real conservatives, believe in the rule of law. And they believe in the Constitution. And they believe we should keep our agreements that we make with the world. Ronald Reagan, in fact, signed the Torture Accountability Treaty back in 1984, and he said at the time that we will not abide by torture. We will hold folks accountable for torture. They will be prosecuted, or they will be extradited to another country who will prosecute them. That's what the UN Torture Accountability Treaty requires. Ronald Reagan believed in it. George Bush even believed in it. George W. Bush, before the war, he warned that war criminals will be prosecuted, and he said that following orders will be no excuse, merely following the orders of superiors. Of course, he was talking to the folks in Iraq, not to the folks here in the U.S., the folks who broke these laws, the folks who are decidedly not conservative. And by the way, was speaking to Howard before the break. Howard had said that he saw nothing wrong with torturing a few people. Hey, break a few eggs, so be it. It's a war on, after all, and you gotta do what you gotta do. Well, no, you don't gotta do what you gotta do. You don't gotta break the law. You don't gotta torture people. You don't gotta bury them in a box for 17 hours. You don't have to waterboard them 83 times over and over again. There is no ticking time bomb. Well, there is one ticking time bomb. Where is it? Scott Roeder, the guy who shot Dr. George Tiller in the head and killed him. Because George Tiller was performing perfectly legal medical procedures. He got shot in the head by Scott Roeder, who is now in jail, saying there are further attacks that are planned, similar attacks on abortion clinics. Really, Mr. Roeder? Well, isn't it time that we waterboard you and find out? Isn't it time we bury you for 17 hours and find out? Where the hell are all these right-wingers? Why are they not calling for the torture of Scott Roeder? That's what I'd like to know. Anyway, I was talking to Howard, and I told him to stick around until after the top of the hour, that I would take him and talk about it more with him. And I screwed up, hung up on him. Howard, my apologies. I didn't mean to, because people need to understand. And I realize I'll take Howard at his word when he says that, oh, he probably agrees with me 95% of the time. But when it comes to torture, we got to torture. We got to do what we got to do. Well, I'll take him at his word that he's a real progressive fella, and he just doesn't understand what's so wrong about torturing a few people. Well, talk to the people who have been tortured. Talk to the people, talk to Jesse Ventura, who went through the SEER program like so many in our military and was actually waterboarded. Talk to Mancow Mueller, who thought that this, waterboarding, that's just pouring some water on someone's face. Yeah, until someone did it to him, and then he understood what it was like. And remember, it was not a ticking time bomb. This is not Jack Bauer. This is not 24. These people were being tortured by Dick Cheney and his psychotic, satanic friends, because they wanted a justification to go to war. And if they had to make one up, if they had to torture someone into giving a false confession that there was a tie between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, a tie that didn't exist, they didn't give a damn. They would do it. And, oh, by the way, it's illegal. Did I mention that? Wingnuts? Got a problem with that? Disagree with me? Feel free to give me a call if you can get through. 877-520-1150. We're going to talk about that and, frankly, anything else that's on your mind. I'm not an angry fella. We could talk about Mark Sanford. You heard he had an affair, right? Yeah. Here's an email of his. He wrote to his Argentinian lover. Argentinian lover? I don't know. He wrote, "You have a particular grace." It's late enough that I can do it. The kids are asleep. "You have a particular grace and calm that I adore. You have a level of sophistication that so fitting with your beauty. I could digress and say that you have the ability to give magnificent gentle kisses, or that I love your tan lines, or that I love the curve of your hips, the erotic beauty of you holding yourself or two magnificent parts of yourself." Why are you covering your face, Des? I'm just reading what the conservative governor of South Carolina wrote. But hey, that would be going into sexual details, Mark Sanford said. Oh, you should have heard Rush Limbaugh crying today, saying he could have been our JFK. That's what he was saying. He could have been our JFK. Oh, it's terrible. We feel sorry for you, Rush. Sorry, Bubba. He's done. John Ensign from Nevada, he's done. Why? Because they cheated on their wives. Why does it matter? Because George Bush wouldn't have been in office had it not been for you idiot opportunists pulling that nonsense with Bill Clinton in the 90s, saying that infidelity matters and that these guys should resign. That's what Mark Sanford said. That's what John Ensign of Nevada said. You got to resign when you do that sort of a thing. Well, the roosters are coming home to roost. How do you say that? Chickens. There you go. And the chickens and the roosters are all coming home to roost. And you presidential hopefuls on the Republican side, you're just S out of luck. Let's get to some of your calls. Let's see here. Mike in Atlanta, Georgia. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. What's up?
Hey, I disagree with you.
Okay, good.
But I appreciate you having a somewhat civil conversation about it. And unlike Sean Hannity, which, you know, you might actually be right about that.
All right.
Harrison, but...
Why do you disagree with me?
Well, for a couple reasons. I think the big answer is... In your mind, you think that it's an ideological reality that we can keep our nation safe and not have to do things that aren't always good and not always, you know, the way we would like them to be. That everything is clean and everything is fine.
Well, listen, let's just keep it to torture for the moment. Yes, okay. I think we can protect our country without torturing people. You disagree?
Okay. I do, and one specific example would be, say, Abu Zubaydah. When, as a result of the enhanced interrogations or torture, whatever you want to call it, that led us to capture Khalid Sheikh Mohammed directly because of the information that we ascertained from him in those enhanced interrogation techniques.
Wrong.
When we caught
Mike, where's your evidence for that?
Evidence?
Yeah.
For that that. The interrogations of Zubaydah led to KSM. It's not even. That's not even debated.
No. You said, Mike. You said under the enhanced interrogation techniques. Have you read? Have you read the testimony of the man from the FBI? Ali Sharif, who testified 2 weeks ago in Congress. The man who got this information from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who said that... Abu Zubaydah, my apologies. Who said that once the CIA guys, the contractors, came in and started torturing him, he clammed up. That any usable information that was received from Zubaydah was obtained under normal interrogation techniques. Did you read that?
I did see that, actually, yes. And,
okay.
And you can take that, but then you can take everybody else who was involved, Republican or Democrat, including a lot of Obama's guys, that say things to the contrary, that the information that was gleaned from him during the enhanced interrogation
Mike?
Was valuable.
And who? Then, who says that there was valuable information from Obama's side that was gained under torture? Who?
Who's his director of national intelligence, Dennis Blair? Who is his CIA chief, Leon Panetta?
Leon Panetta has not said that there was any. Hang on, Mike. Leon Panetta has not said that there was valuable intelligence gained under torture. Nobody has, except for the liars and the people who have looked at those memos. Hang on. The people who have looked at those memos that Dick Cheney keeps pointing to that say will prove how many thousands of lives, hundreds of thousands of lives were saved, the people who have looked at those tortures, those classified memos, guys like Senator Feingold, guys like Senator Patrick Leahy, they said they read those memos and they say no such thing. So I don't know where your evidence is from, Mike.
That's fine, and I appreciate you having a conversation. I like a civil conversation, but you named Feingold and Leahy, who like it or not, are two extreme partisans, just like Cheney is an extreme partisan on the other side. The intelligence professionals, like the chief of the CIA, is not a partisan position. Dennis Blair is not a partisan position.
I don't know if Dennis Blair saying I don't know if anybody Dennis Blair
said it was well publicized on all the networks that he said that we gained valuable information from the enhanced interrogation.
And he's a Democrat, is that what you're saying?
I encourage you. Yeah, he's Obama's guy.
Des, can you look up Dennis Blair for me on Google? What's that, Mike?
He's the guy that Obama appointed to the position.
All right, well, I'm going to look up what Dennis Blair had to say, and we'll give it a fair hearing, Mike.
One more question for you.
Okay, real quick.
Assuming torture is bad or waterboarding is bad.
No, it's illegal. Torture is not beyond bad. It's illegal, okay? Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, it's illegal.
Yeah.
Is it legal then for, say, if we have a drone attack, if we know there are terrorists in Pakistan or Afghanistan, we hit an Al-Qaeda camp and there's terrorists that are maimed.
Is it illegal?
And blown up.
Is it illegal?
I don't know, is it?
I'm not an attorney, so I can't tell you. I'm not an attorney, Mike. I got to get to a break. I'm not an attorney.
Why are police bombing him and taking his arm off?
I got to get to a break. Mike, I can't tell you. I'm not an attorney. If it's illegal, I say bring accountability. If George Bush did it and it's illegal, accountability. Barack Obama did it and it's illegal, accountability. I don't give a damn. I believe in the rule of law. I'm not a fake conservative. I believe in the rule of law and the Constitution. Brad, in for Malloy. More after this. Program Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Malloy all week long, live from Los Angeles, California, from the lovely studios of Stephanie Miller's lovely studio here at KTalk AM 1150 in Los Angeles. Hitting the lines, whatever you want to talk about. Let's get everybody in here. Jonathan from Burlington, Vermont. Welcome to the show, sir. What's on your mind?
Oh, yeah, hi. When you had the exchange with your guest regarding, where he had said that Americans seem to be incapable of taking to the streets, unlike any other population in the world, I tend to agree with him. And I tend to disagree with you when you said it's because of, I do agree that Americans are very overworked, much mm-hmm. like the Japanese were 20 years ago. But I think it's because, I'm really sad to say, I think it's because Americans are very character disordered, are extraordinarily character disordered, and have been because of a kind of alienation program from the right wing, this I am an island, I am a rock, who will not have socialism, who will not have public...
Jonathan, there's not character disorder, it's media disorder. I mean,
no,
we're going...
No. But what
why?
I'm saying is it's not their fault.
Yeah.
It was done to them, but they've got to... Somebody's got to smack them upside their head.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Snap out of it.
All right. Thanks, Jonathan. That's the media's job. The media needs to be doing their job, and they're not. We were going to have Sue Wilson on tonight. She's got a new film out, Broadcast Blues. BroadcastBlues.tv. You can get more information. We're going to have her on later in the week. We had to reschedule her, but the media has been dysfunctional. The media is disinforming and misinforming America. I don't blame Americans, and by the way, they show up. They do show up. They showed up before the war. We've got pictures of hundreds of thousands of folks in the streets, but you had to get those pictures. My God, they weren't on CNN. You had to go, they were there, but they were ignored. They were ignored. We had more folks turned down for those demonstrations in this country and around the world prior to the war than any other demonstrations in the history of this country, but nobody covered it. I'm going to get one more call in. I know. Julie. Julie in Trucking in Florida. What's up, Julie?
Yes, I thank you for taking my call. I'm thankful for David and for you too that he's pursuing that sorts of thing because they should not get away with it. We need to get round the whole bunch up and just go down trial.
Well, you're out there on the highways. You got your CB, right? So you can remind people every now and again that torture is unforgivable and there needs to be accountability.
Yeah, it is. It's unforgivable. You know, I'm a bear. To think that we, a country like ours actually did that. And I think those pictures ought to be shown, too.
I hear you. Thanks, Julie. Thanks for the call.
Good night.
Drive safe out there, all right?
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Let's get to Mark in Tampa. Oh, my friend Mark Adams. How are you, sir? I got to get to the bottom of the hour, so give it to me quick.
All right, I'm doing good, Brad.
Good.
Great show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to mention that we're not actually at war since the Congress is the only body in our system of government that has the power to declare war, and it still hasn't declared war. So the whole thing's unconstitutional. And regarding torture, you know, people don't realize, because like you mentioned, the media keeps the public in the dark, that in 2003, Congress found that torture occurs regularly here in the United States. In fact, it found that about 50,000 people are raped while in police custody every year.
Oh, now you want us to start worrying about laws here, too, in the Constitution. Hey, Mark, I got to run to a break. Thanks for calling in, my friend.
Sure.
Keep making noise out there. More of your calls right after this. Brad in for Malloy. The Malloy program, Brad Friedman in for Malloy. We're talking torture, we're talking accountability, we're talking about anything you want, anything I can fit in here to the rest of the hour, 34 minutes after. 877-520-1150 are our numbers for this week and this week only as we sit in until the end of the week. Well, Mike and Kathy enjoy a much-needed vacation down there somewhere in the Sunshine State. Don't go looking for them, don't go bothering them. Just call us here. All right, we had a caller before the break there said that Dennis Blair, Obama's National Security Intelligence, what's his job there, Des?
Director of National Intelligence.
Yeah, he had a memo, private memo that somehow got disclosed, and Greg Sargent over at Plumline wrote about it. Hadn't read this memo. I believe it was Greg Sargent, was it not?
Yes, Greg Sargent over at the Plumline.
All right, read us what he put together there, Des.
He says, there seems to be some confusion about whether Obama Intel Chief Dennis Blair's private memo saying torture has yielded, quote, high-value information is in contradiction with his public statement saying that torture has done us far more harm than good. In his private memo, Blair said that in some cases torture yielded, quote, high-value information that has provided a deeper understanding of al-Qaeda. He said he couldn't promise he wouldn't have approved such tactics in the wake of 9/11. That's in the private memo. Mm-hmm. In his public statement, he said that despite those facts, torture still does more harm than good and is not essential to our national security. Now, this is Greg Sargent going further, saying, sorry, these two statements are not mutually exclusive. Many will disagree with Blair's initial statement. Many will believe that his real views skew in the direction of the private memo. All are fine, but the simple fact is that his public statement deserves to be part of this discussion, and it isn't contradicted by what's in the private memo. Blair can believe that torture has worked in isolated cases and believe that overall torture is bad policy, period.
Not only is it bad policy, it's illegal. It's illegal. If you want to change the law, if you want to break our treaties, do it. And by the way, that's Obama's National Director of Intelligence.
National Intelligence.
Yeah. I don't care. I don't care, you know, if you think you're going to hit me because this is Obama's guy, I don't care. I don't give a damn. It, you know, if it's wrong, it's wrong. You break the law, you break the law. So, sorry, if there's information to show that torture has somehow helped us, information that was gained that we couldn't have gotten through any other measure, any other way, bring it on. I think they should declassify Dick Cheney's memos that he says show how many hundreds of thousands of lives were saved. Frankly, I believe Dick Cheney is a liar. That's been proven, and the folks who have not been shown to be liars, guys like Senator Feingold, guys like Patrick Leahy, who are a senior, the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, who have actually read these memos, said that no, they don't show any such thing that Dick Cheney claims they show. Anyway, bring them out. Let's see it. I'm a transparency guy. Bring it on. Robin is trucking in California, joins us on the Malloy Show. What's up, Robin?
Brad, you're doing a wonderful job.
Thank you, sir.
I've got a little message for Mike and for Howard.
Yeah.
And for anybody else that can't seem to rub two brain cells together and get this. This is the way it is, and I'm speaking as a former Marine.
All right.
Let's forget about the fact, the idea of whether or not torture is illegal. Let's forget about whether or not it works. Torture is the act of a coward. Plain and simple, it's the act of a coward.
I don't disagree with you.
Our country has no honor, because there is no honor in torture. And until we bring these rapacious bastards to justice, we have no honor.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your thoughts, Robin, and thank you for your service to the country. Much appreciated.
One more thing.
Yeah.
A quick shout out to my buddy Guitar Opie in Portland, Oregon. Have a good night, Brad.
Well done, Robin. Thank you, sir. Let's get to, where am I here? Okay, well, we're going to break it up here. Jerry in Los Angeles. What's up, Jerry?
Oh, yeah, hi.
Hi.
Well, why are they making a big deal out of this Mark Stanford, governor of South Carolina?
Sanford.
Why are they making a big deal out of his affair? Prince Vaughn, I forgot his name, who's married to Zsa Gabor, has affairs, and nobody makes a big deal out of his affairs.
Well, Prince, whatever his name is, did he call for the impeachment of Bill Clinton?
I don't think he's a politician.
Is he planning on running? Is he a front runner for the 2012 Republican presidential nomination?
No, I don't think he's a politician.
There you go.
He's a public figure.
That's why. But see, that's why this matters, because this guy has set himself up. But he's a hypocrite, and people need to know about it, don't they?
Why is he a hypocrite? I'm just curious.
Well, because he paraded around as a family values guy. He condemned Bill Clinton. For having affairs called for him.
As far as that goes, you got a little point there, but
that's a big point,
Jerry. You know, there's such things as open marriages. Did anybody ever hear about open marriages?
Yeah, and you know what, Jerry? I don't care. I don't care if they have affairs, as long as they don't run around. It's like, and thanks for the call. It's like these guys who have been outed. If you haven't seen the movie Outrage, new documentary out by Kirby Dick and my friend Mike Rogers, who has been outing folks like Larry Craig, he won't out folks who have not been hypocrites on the topic of gay issues, of same-sex marriage. It only matters when you got these guys who are out there saying, no, we don't believe in equality for all. Because you're gay, you don't get the rights that everybody else does. And they're lawmakers, and they're out making laws to that effect. Well, if it turns out they are gay and they're secretly having affairs, and worse, in the men's room, then the world needs to know about it. And that's not outing, that's reporting. And hypocrisy is news, and it needs to be reported on. Yeah, that's my opinion. Let me get to, here we go, Steve in Reseda. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Brad, how you doing?
I'm okay.
First off, great interview with Ed Asner yesterday. Thanks for that.
Oh, thank you. That was kind of hilarious, wasn't he?
It was. But here's a question for you.
Yeah.
I'm a very simple person, so maybe you can explain this to me.
Yeah.
Cheney keeps saying his memos, you can't release his information, national security, but we saved your asses, and sorry the language. But, you know, they saved hundreds of thousands of lives.
Right.
How is releasing that information breaking national security if you just tell us, here was the plot, is what they plan to do?
Well,
how does that protect us and make us less safe by telling us what it is?
Well, you know, Cheney is the guy who has been more secretive than anyone else in the history of this nation, and he wants this memo released. He thinks it's safe to release. So why Obama is not releasing it at this point, I don't really understand. I think it should be released.
Yeah, I'm lost there, because it keeps saying, oh, this is national security. Well, what's it going to harm to tell us what they'd planned to do if it was plot was spoiled?
Well, all of a sudden he wants to release this stuff, and for years he's been against releasing or saying anything, even where he lived. He had his house removed from Google. Thanks for the call, Steve.
Thanks.
All right, let's go to Garrett in Covina. What's up, Garrett?
What's up, man? How's it going?
You know, it's this, it's that.
Oh, yeah.
How can I help you?
Another Family Values member trying to impeach Bill Clinton. Turns out, another one.
Yeah, another one. There.
Listen, these little Republicans just need to go back and thank Kenneth Starr, because this that Lewinsky scandal, that backfired on their face tenfold.
Yeah, well, you know what? It did backfire on them to one extent. To another extent, it didn't, because they wouldn't have had George W. Bush if it wasn't for that scandal. And by the way, Ken Starr...
He had to steal it. Remember, he had to steal it. And Kenneth Starr, you might get him.
Well, I know. Believe me.
Not over. You might get him, and you might get Karl Rove, too.
Wait, we might get Ken Starr for president?
Oh, no, you might get Kenneth Starr. Something might come out on him. He probably...
Oh, yeah.
We're not finished with him.
Well, yeah, he is working pretty hard to annul, what is it, 18,000 marriages out here in California. Yes. He's trying to get them annulled, these family values, folks. So, you've finally got these people married.
He might be. Don't be surprised.
All right. Thank you, Garrett. Don't be spreading those rumors now. All right. Thank you. Let's get to Brian. He's been holding forever. Brian in Manchester, New Hampshire. How are you, sir? Sorry about that. Long wait.
Yeah, you had two great guests on earlier tonight, Brad and Miss Edmonds and Mr. Swanson.
Yes, sir.
And I wanted to talk to Miss Edmonds about the book, Murray Weiss's book, The Man Who Warned America, about John O'Neill, who died on September 11th at the World Trade Center, and whose FBI was stopped at every turn from stopping some of what would become the future September 11th hijackers. The fact remains, I was going to ask Mr. Swanson, too, that does he think anybody in the Congress or the Senate is going to have any kind of real investigation of the torture, of the lies to the Iraq War, that is going to take place before, I believe, sadly, but I hope I'm proven wrong, that by January 20th, 2013, Barack Obama will be removed and he'll leave the White House in shame. And I wanted to also get out to
You want Barack Obama to leave the White House in shame?
I don't want that to happen, but that's what's going to happen with the right-wing media. We're not standing up to it. We need to boycott the right-wing media.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that I wanted to also get out to my former fellow Marine there, I agree with you, sir, and Matthew Alexander, the guy who got that the al-Zarqawi guy in 2006 in Iraq, the most wanted terrorist there, by not using torture, by talking to the Sunni insurgents who were secularist against the Islamic al-Qaeda people there. He stopped that guy by not using torture, by making friends. But he says, Matthew Alexander, for years served in Iraq, says that thousands of American troops were lost because the foreign fighters coming in there, the suicide bombers especially, they came in there, because they knew Americans tortured Islamic people all over the world, at Bagram and at Gitmo and all that.
They're holding it against us, Brian.
That's the reason why thousands of Americans.
Yep.
And
it ain't going to stop.
That made Americans safer, for God's sake.
And these guys have long memories. Thanks for the call, Brian.
Thank
Always
you,
good to hear from you. Thank you. Let's get a call in before the break. All right, you can give us a call. We might be able to pitch you in after the break. 877-520-1150. Yeah, let's break. Then we'll come back and do our final segment. Anything else is on your mind, you can try to get in. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy all day long, all week long. Having fun now, Tony? Yeah, we're having fun. All right, right back. It's 46 after the hour.
Some of you young folks been saying to me, "Hey, Pops, what you mean? What a wonderful world. How about all them wars all over the place? You call them wonderful? And how about hunger and pollution? They ain't so wonderful either. But how about listening to old Pops for a minute? Seems to me it ain't the world that's so bad, but what we are doing to it. And all I'm saying is, see what a wonderful world it would be if only we'd give it a chance. Love, baby, love. That's the secret. Yeah. If lots more of us loved each other, we'd solve lots more problems. And man, this world would be a guesser. That's why old Pops keeps saying.
You Tell 'em, Pops. Brad Friedman in for our final segment here on the Mike Malloy Show tonight. We'll be back with you on Thursday and Friday. I do hope you will join us. We're going to get clear these phone lines. Don't you worry, so stay in there. But I do want to thank my guests tonight, Sibel Edmonds and David Swanson, for joining us. And Desi Doyen for producing the show. Tony Sorrentino for engineering under very difficult circumstances. Miranda Moreno screening our calls. Ben Birch at White Rose Society. Agent 99 at bradblog.com for monitoring the chat room. Of course, the folks here at K-Talk AM 1150. And yes, Mike and Kathy Malloy for allowing me to ruin their show for them. Thank you, folks. I much appreciate it. All right. As long as we're listening to Louie in the background here, let's get to Louie calling in from Garden Grove, California. Welcome to the show, Louie.
Hello. You know, this is the first time I listen to your program. I listened to Mike Malloy a few times. But I honestly couldn't stand him because he talks like a right-wing nut. He's so hateful toward the other side. And we can't afford hate, especially from our side, because we're supposed to be the good guys. We need to drop this hate. And I listen to you, and I think you're doing the right thing. You're speaking, you're educating, and you don't have much what Mike Malloy has, and I think you can work on that.
Well, thank you, Louie. I appreciate that, except I'll disagree with you when it comes to Mike. I know him.
I love Mike.
You won't find a sweeter guy.
Thank you. Thank you, bye.
All right, thank you. Let's get to Frank. You know, where am I here? I'm sorry, Dave in Chicago. Dave, what's up, my friend?
Yeah, Mike Malloy knows how to fight with these people. He got to fight with conservatives, except with guys like Howard, a caller from before. That guy's reaching out for information. And this is the argument about torture to end all arguments. Hans Scharf was born in Germany, moved to Africa, and on a vacation back to Germany, the Nazis grabbed him and conscripted him into service because he was a smart guy, spoke several languages, and the Nazis needed translators. The translators worked with interrogators. Interrogators were beat up on a POWs, and then they would call in guys like Hans Scharf, and they would translate the conversation between the POWs and the intel people. Due to an aviation accident, the Nazis lost two interrogators, so they pushed Scharf into double duty. So not only was he translating, he was interrogating too. Well, it sucked before, and now it sucked even more because he had to beat up on these guys and stuff. So what he started doing was...
Quickly, Dave, I'm coming to the top of the hour.
He started doing things his own way. He started using psychological tricks to start getting information out of the POWs. What he found out is it worked better. He got more information.
Yep.
He got better information.
Yeah, here's a psychological trick that we use that seemed to work well. We offered them cookies.
Right. What they found out was that this worked better.
Yeah.
And he single-handedly made torture obsolete.
Thank you, Dave.
1943.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the call. And I agree. Mark in Los Angeles, very quickly, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I don't know if this Howard guy is some CIA operative like Howard Hunt and Priscilla McMillian used to write stuff for newspapers and try to plant stuff.
No, he was just he was just a misguided guy,
okay,
and I would have liked
so
to have continued
idiot
with him.
Blue dog. You know what?
Yeah.
This is the Mike Malloy Show.
Yeah.
We don't do anything nice and easy here, so if you're some kind of Democrat that likes to sit back and pull impeachment off the table, or if you're some kind of Democrat that keeps voting for war funding to go into a country and start blowing away women and children and luring them out of their houses with food and water, are you okay with a 14-year-old girl, Howard, getting blown away and raped or
hey,
family
brother,
burned
Mark,
down?
No, Mark, that's why we got to educate him, my friend, and I would have liked to have done that, so I'm sorry that I accidentally hung up on him. But, yeah, you know what? If you don't hear from these folks, you don't know what people are thinking, you can't respond to them, and that's what, that's what I wanted to do, and that's what you've done. Thank you, Mark, for doing so. I got to get to one more call, and then I'm out. All right? Frank, the last guy. Frank in Los Angeles, you got 30 seconds.
Mike Malloy calls it as it is, but what I wanted to say that the Democrats have poor PR. Universal health care, the Republicans are saying it costs too much. The Democrats just say it's going to cost less. We're going to save money because everybody's paying into the system, and nobody's dragging, exploiting the system.
Well, remember, the Republicans have a pretty good PR agency. You can't pay for what they get from CNN and MSNBC and Fox News and the corporate media. So, you know, the people understand 72% want a public option of some type, and the Republicans have told them to go to hell, haven't they?
Well, they've always said that to the public anyway.
And now the Democrats are buying into it. And a word out tonight is that Rahm Emanuel would be open to no public option. Let's change that, shall we? Start ringing some phones at the White House. Start ringing some phones in Congress. Enough of this crap. This is your country, people. It's time to take it back. Thanks for the call, Frank. All right. Brad Friedman, I've enjoyed myself here for the last three nights. I'll be here for two more. I hope you've enjoyed myself here, because I ain't going anywhere. Thanks for everything, guys. Much appreciated. My thanks again to Mike and Kathy Malloy. Those of you listening on the MikeMalloy.com stream, please stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid. We'll see you tomorrow night. Keep it lit.